Welcome to Careertours. This week, Measuring Relationships, Chapter 2, The Communication Matrix, Part 2. The questions this cast answers are, how do I have effective relationships with people? What do I need to think about when I'm wanting to improve a relationship? And what is the measure of relationship quality?
Folks, just another reminder here about the M conference coming up October 27th and 28th of 2021 in Chicago. We do have a few slots left. It is a two-day conference. It is our most extensive and deep conference. We will be having a series of executives from all across the organizational spectrum, people from our community, sharing what they have learned and what they wish they had known during their rise from individual contributors to managers and to executives. And as you probably can imagine, the focus is on how to do it better. Not theory, not high-level concepts, but actually, this is what I learned, and this is what I did, and here's what happened. Because that's what we would want, which is actionable guidance. I strongly encourage you to consider the M Conference, especially since the M Conference, even though it's $3,000, comes with a 10-year free license, which is essentially worth $2,000. So the conference over 2 days actually is only $1,000. Pretty good deal.
Welcome back, everybody. We talked about frequency, communication frequency last week, and now we're going to pick up with the other dimension of communication, which is quality.
Yeah, human beings measure communication based on two things, frequency, as we've covered, and the proportion of the conversation that matters to them. We are inherently selfish creatures. We wake up in the morning thinking about our day. We drive to work thinking about our experience in traffic. We get to work and our experience of the morning is based on whether or not there's coffee for us. Mm-hmm. Our entire lives are about ourselves.
Yeah. And so when you're talking to someone else, they're measuring the quality of the conversation by whether or not you're talking about what matters to them. And it's true for all of us. It's not just them, it's us too. So think about one of your colleagues coming to you right now and talking about what they did last night. And maybe they're into Dungeons and Dragons. And they tell you about this amazing idea and all about their mage and how powerful he is and that spell and the dodecahedron dice that they have. And if you're into Dungeons and Dragons, you're probably quite excited by this conversation and you're probably going to email me and tell me all the things I just said wrong. But for 99% of people who are not into that, they couldn't care less. And so they're thinking, I'm just waiting for this person to stop talking and say something that matters to me.
Right. And the perfect example of this for me is once we had kids, once my wife and I had kids. Before that, people would tell me about their kids and I would kind of nod and smile and just say like, yeah, okay. But now that I have kids, I'm constantly talking about my kids and I know people are like, okay, all right, cool. You know, I mean, it's so important to me that that's what I want to talk about. And sometimes you'll have people who have that common bond, you know, with their kids. But again, they're not more focused on your kids. They're focused on, oh, how is what you're talking about with your kids apply to me with my kids?
Right.
Right?
Whose school drop-off is worse?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There is kind of this one-ups, especially when I talk to other high eyes, there's kind of this like one-ups kind of game where it's, you know, well, my son had to get stitches. Well, my son broke his arm, like, you know, and then we just go back and forth. But it's the same thing with Dungeons and Dragons. There are going to be people you completely miss the mark on where you're talking about something that's, you know, important to you. They don't get it, right? Or they're talking about something that's important to them and you, it's just going right over your head. I remember having a direct once who talked to me, he was really into video games and he was talking about video games. And I had no idea that there's an actual, I mean, there's a whole industry or I almost said cult. It's not like a cult, but it's just a really big following and people stream, they get on the internet and they stream themselves playing video games and other people watch it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, how boring is that? You're not actually playing the game? And he's like, no, you don't understand. You gotta do it. You gotta see it and then you'll understand. And I was like, all right. Okay. I'm going to have to, you know, try it. And I did. I watched a few and I was like, oh, okay. I definitely could see the appeal, but I would have never guessed in a million years there was a whole industry or you know, following on people who watch other people play video games. Because I remember as a kid, we used to play video games, you know, when we had sleepovers and stuff. And when it wasn't our turn to play, we'd go do something else. We'd find, you know, it just wasn't, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing what people will watch on YouTube.
Oh, absolutely.
It says the person who sent out an email with somebody cleaning carpets on YouTube. Although that is fascinating.
It is.
You know, but if your colleague comes to you and they talk about something that's bothering you, like the project that you're worried about, then you're likely to rank that conversation as productive and useful and enjoyable, maybe, depending on what the response is to this part of the project you're worrying about, just because it's something you care about. You think that conversation is more productive.
Absolutely. Which is why even when we, you know, our one-on-one guidance is let them start first, right? Which takes me to our next point, which is when you're communicating with someone, start with what matters to them. I mean, you can't make them talk first, but you can absolutely bring up something that you know is important to them. So if you have three things on your list to talk to them and you know one of them is connected to their big project, talk about that thing first. If you have good news and bad news, don't separate it out that way. Separate it by what's going to have more impact on them. Don't forget that when you're communicating, you have to communicate in a way that works for them to be effective, which means, yes, this is a DISC cast.
Yes.
We've talked about like DISC ad nauseum.
Every single cast is a DISC cast. But
right. Yes. If we're talking about communication, we're talking about DISC.
And for those that don't know, DISC is a behavioral instrument that tells us how we communicate when we don't think about it first. And there's four different ways, D, I, S, and C. Andrew just said he's a high I, I'm a high D. So we're already annoyed with each other. No, I'm kidding. And if you haven't heard of DISC before, just go to the website and type in DISC. We've had hundreds of podcasts which will explain it. And there's way too much to do now. Oh, but yeah. one of the important things about DISC, and especially about the way we teach it, is that you can adjust the way you talk or the way you communicate to fit with the way that the other person communicates. Not mirroring, because that makes people feel creeped out. But for example, if I talk relatively quickly and relatively in short sentences and aggressively, according to some people, if I'm talking to a high C, I can slow down and talk more clearly and organize my thoughts rather than racing through them.
And maybe look away once in a while. High Ds have a tendency to make really strong eye contact.
That's right.
And high Cs would prefer maybe look away once.
I can stop waving my arms if I think about it. So adjusting the way you're communicating is absolutely possible. And it's another element of making the conversation have quality in the eyes of the other person.
Yeah, absolutely. And what this means is tell the whole story. Not just the parts that matter to you. We most often fall down here when we have to tell our boss something that we know he doesn't want to hear. We want to make the painful conversation last as short of a time as possible. And so we just tell them the bare minimum.
Yeah, like make this conversation short. I'll just tell you the bits I think you need to know.
Yeah, we think that as long as our boss doesn't find out about the bigger story, we'll be fine. Why or how would he find out about that stuff anyway? We think, I'll be all right. I'll skate through. It's fine. Or worse, we don't tell them what they need to know because we don't know what's important to them.
Yes.
Which means we don't communicate frequently enough to them.
Yes, right?
Right? We should know what's important to our boss.
If you don't know what's important to your boss, you're not communicating frequently enough.
Absolutely.
That's a really good point. Or anybody else come to that.
Right, exactly. And then your boss finds out about the other stuff. And part of the story is why you didn't do the things that they think are obvious, right? It might not paint you in a good light. And that's usually the stuff we want to hide. That said, telling the truth is important. Telling the whole truth. Not just the parts that you think your boss wants to know. Your boss gets mad at you when he finds out you haven't been communicating. Not when you make a mistake. And Wendy, I have to say, when I read the show notes, this was the part that I tripped over because I read this and I thought, no, some bosses still get mad when you make a mistake.
They do.
And then I read that you wrote, yeah, some bosses do get mad when you make a mistake too. But over time, every boss has to admit that people make mistakes. And an unintended accident is different from a willful not telling of the whole truth. You know it and we know it. And your boss knows it. So tell the whole story.
So part of the quality of that communication, especially when it's negative, is the completeness of it. And you don't want to tell a story that takes 15 minutes to tell when it's, you know, not that big a deal. So you've got to be concise because bosses have a limited amount of time, but you've also got to make sure that you hit all of the points. To Andrew's point, you might not know what it is that's important to them.
Mm-hmm. Folks, this cast is about communication, and it would be remiss of me not to mention our Effective Communications Conference. I've said it before, I'll keep saying it until they retire me and put me out to pasture, and that is the single most important thing I learned in terms of a tactic or a strategy in my professional life was how to communicate in a way that makes sense to people who don't communicate in the same way as I do. And that's what the ECC teaches in enormous detail with lots of practice and, frankly, a little bit of tension-filled practice in terms of getting out of your comfort zone and learning how to communicate with people differently than you. And the ECC comes in every form we can possibly make it. You can attend it at a public conference, usually paid by your company. You can attend it if your company or organization hires us to deliver it on site or by virtual delivery. You can sign up for our video course, which takes you through a series of, it's got to be 40 or 50 10-minute videos that describe in detail every step and then give you practice scenarios, which you then mail to us. And I mentioned virtual earlier. We do this both virtually and in person. And for those of you who want to learn more about communication, we have many, 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 probably 50 to 75 podcasts in the map of the universe that shows all of the casts that address DISC and effective communications. Anytime you want to get better at communications, it's not enough to read. It's not enough to study. You have to practice because the things you do when you're communicating, you so take for granted, you don't realize that there might be a better way. I encourage you to check out our Effective Communication Conference. Tell them Mark sent you.
So the last part of this guidance is actually using the communication matrix. So we described this at the beginning of the first cast. It's a 2x2 matrix. So you draw a box and you draw a horizontal line and a vertical line to divide it into four boxes. And then you write communication frequency, low, high across the two columns at the top. And you write communication quality, low at the bottom and high so that it's across the rows. And then what you can do is plot your relationships on that matrix. And again, if you have a license, you can print out the matrix so you don't have to work through me describing it. And there's no metrics on a 2x2. There's no, other than low, high, there's nothing, you know, there's not a 0.57 measure of quality. But if you start with someone you have a really good relationship with and you put them where you would put them on the box, and you start with someone that you think you have a really poor relationship with and you put them on the box, then everybody else kind of fills in between. If you start with the two ends, it helps give you some parameters as to where you would plot the others. And if you go back to measuring relationships, if you go to the website and put in measuring relationships, it will bring you up the chapter one of this podcast, which talks about measures and proxies and things that you can use if you're struggling to decide where you would put someone. And where you put someone, whether it's, you know, I mean, the box isn't that big. If it's like, you know, half an inch one way or another, it's not a big deal. This is about being able to visualize where everybody is in a kind of bigger picture and sort of roughly. And it's probable that you have 20 to 100 people that you communicate with regularly. So you might know what fit 100 people into the box. So just start with the ones that are most important.
Yeah. And they can't all be in the high, high box, mm-hmm. right? Because otherwise you'd be doing nothing but working on your relationships. You also have to get results. And so once you can see those relationships plotted out, you can be strategic about where you put in discretionary effort, right? Your boss, your team, anyone who you receive work from or give work to, those folks have to be in the top right box. That's a given. That's your baseline effort, not your discretionary effort. If your boss is not in the top right box, start there,
yes.
Right? I mean,
here's how
full
to
stop. Don't do anything else.
Instantly improve your career. Start there.
Yeah. And how do you do that? You do that by increasing frequency and quality of communication with your boss or by someone else that I mentioned who's not in that top right box. And then look at who's remaining. Who is the most important to you? This may not be the people who are the most obvious.
Admins know this. Admins always know the janitor. They know the guy who does AV. They know the guy or the girl who books out the conference rooms. They know the person in catering who can get them a catered lunch at short notice. They always know those people really well, and they work on those relationships. And that's because those people are more important to a CEO's admin than the CEO's directs. Like that the SVP of something is less important to the admin on a daily basis in serving the CEO than the person in catering, which is weird. Those are the people she needs to get her job done. And so those are the people that she works on the relationships with.
Wendy, would you say that if people perhaps are struggling with who these people could be, these kind of support people, people that could be really helpful? I think we did a cast in the new job series.
Yes, we did.
Where we kind of outlined who are the people you need to know, right? Who in IT do you need to know? Who do you need to make sure you have a contact number to get a hold of if you have an AV emergency or something like that?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So if you go to the website and you type new job in the search bar, you'll get the new job. There's a series of them. And one of them is, you're right, about people that you know.
Yeah. And if you're not sure, think of the people that could cause that stone in your shoe, the people who could make your job easier or help you be more productive or more useful or better for customers. Increase the quality and quantity of communication with those people.
And the great thing about taking the time to actually plot these relationships, actually print out the thing and plot that, is that you can measure the improvement over time. Just stick with the same measure. However in your mind you organize these people onto this grid, do that again in 3 months and you can see what's changed. And hopefully the relationships that you prioritized have improved. More of them have moved into that high box.
I love that. I love the visual aspect of that, right? I mean, you can see it. You could take a picture of it or just put it in a file and then 3 months from now, do it again. Do it from scratch. Don't refer back,
yes.
Right? Do it from scratch and then compare and go, oh, wow, I've really made a lot of headway here. Or maybe I, you know, didn't place a lot of effort in, you know, my communication with this person. And so they fell a little further down. I think that's really, really powerful.
And most people aren't that strategic about their relationships.
Oh, absolutely.
So you're doing something that most people aren't doing. If you want to know what the secret to careers is, most of them aren't secrets, but this is this is one of them. And then when you're looking at it, maybe someone has become more important to you or less important to you. You know, maybe somebody is now on a project with you and you want to improve that relationship, or maybe someone is no longer on a project with you and you can adjust your efforts accordingly. Yeah. To.
I do want to point out, Wendy, as I was reading through this, the show notes for this cast, I loved it. And as I looked at the four block, the communication matrix, I thought to myself, there's a quadrant here. There's a block here that could be a little bit of a trap. And that is the communication frequency low, but communication quality high box.
Right.
For me, when I look at that, I think to myself, well, if you're not communicating frequently enough with someone, how do you know that your communication quality is high? And I think that's where there's potential for a little bit of a pitfall, because you may perceive the quality of that communication as high, but are they perceiving that communication yeah. quality as high?
And how do you know, right?
And how do you know? Because you're not communicating. What I was trying to think of was someone that I don't communicate very frequently with, but that communication is really high. And I don't have, I mean, I couldn't think of someone that, you know, maybe childhood friends that we don't talk very often, but I think we have a strong relationship. Mm-hmm. But even when we talk, I wouldn't think it's very, very good quality from their side. Mm-hmm.
It's like the Christmas letter, right?
Exactly.
I send you a beautiful Christmas letter. It's 8 paragraphs long, but I only send it once a year. It's yeah. got high quality. Actually, it doesn't, because it's all about you and not
right.
about them. But you could say it's a high quality communication. You spend a lot of time on it, but you yeah. only send it once a year. Are you fans? It's like you get those things through the door of charities And they're like, we sent you a pencil. Okay. That's our high quality. I mean, they spent money on the pencil, but they only send it once a year.
Right.
What does it mean to me? Nothing.
Right.
And that's a really good point. The other trap is to stop communicating with the people you've just built a relationship with. So you have somebody in the high quadrant and you're like, oh, I'm doing great with them. And you stop putting any effort in. And that's just a waste of the effort that you've already put in to move that person up there. And then the other one is to work really hard on some relationship and find that it doesn't change. And there are some people who you're just never going to develop a good working relationship with. You can try all you like and it's not going to work. But if it doesn't work, make sure it doesn't work because it's not going to work and not because you didn't try. You know, let it go eventually, but put the effort in and see if you can change it around first. And in my experience, when I think about all the times I've done this, I've managed to turn it around every time. So
that's great.
It is just effort of quality and frequency. That's all that makes a difference.
Absolutely.
So unlike you, who are a relationship people-focused person, relationships to us task-focused people are a complete mystery. And we wonder how high eyes like Andrew jaunt through life, making friends everywhere. And the answer is they just do it naturally. But like any skill, you can break it down. You can imitate it. You can see what they're doing and you can learn it and you can do it yourself. But just don't tell them how you learned it because, you know, just let them think they're special.
And if it is natural to you, it's an important skill to be able to teach.
Exactly.
And without breaking it down into frequency and quality, how else do you teach it? You just say, oh, you'll figure it out.
Right. So if you're a boss and you've got directs who are struggling with their relationships and you're a high I, it's really hard to know. Oh, just do what I do. No.
Right.
Give them this, because if they're task focused, this is what they need.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, everyone.